Good morning. It's Air Talk. I'm Larry Mantle. Great to have you with us. Johns Hopkins Medicine is launching a psychedelic research center. $17 million has been contributed by private donors. We're going to talk about what they're planning to study, whether it's psilocybin in mushrooms or LSD and potential benefits. With us, Dr. Roland Griffiths, director of the Center for Psychedelic and Consciousness Research at Johns Hopkins. Dr. Griffiths, good to have you with us.
Pleased to join you.
So what are some of the areas where you think some of the early research projects are likely to go?
Well, this is a re-emerging field, and there's so many different incredibly interesting questions, both scientifically and therapeutically, to address with these compounds, the psychedelics, that really for which the research really came to a standstill for some number of decades. The primary therapeutic targets that we are interested in include things like depression, depression associated with alcohol use or Lyme disease. We're interested in anorexia. We're interested in Alzheimer's, as I mentioned, and we also have some studies planned in the area of creativity and in microdosing.
The title psychedelic and consciousness research, when I think of consciousness, I think of what some people have touted as the abilities of these hallucinogenic substances to provide someone with an altered way of experiencing or perceiving the world, and that there could be some benefit to that, even if that's impossible to quantify. Is that something that you're going to attempt to capture in this research?
Yeah, absolutely. There's something very unique about the experiences that unfold with these compounds when given to people who are carefully selected and prepared and supported during these experiences. But fundamentally, at high probability, people will have experiences that they rate retrospectively as among the most personally meaningful experiences of their entire lifetimes, on par with birth of a firstborn child or death of a parent. And these experiences have deep existential meaning and contribute, we believe, to the therapeutic value of these compounds in allowing people to address psychiatric problems or behavioral problems that have haunted them substantially for, in some cases, decades.
And is that because it's believed that these substances have the ability to tap the unconscious in a way that can be difficult to access, let's say, through psychotherapy, and that that's what leads to these sorts of breakthroughs, or is there something else involved?
Well, that's a great question. So we don't fully understand the mechanism of action of what it is or how it is these compounds produce these effects. There are dozens of levels of explanation, and one might be, in fact, that people come to novel psychological insights or understandings that are informative about unconscious processes. But concurrent with that, there's the whole neurochemistry and brain mechanism story about what's going on at the level of circuitry in the brain. And so we don't have a complete explanation, but the level, the magnitude of the kinds of effects that we see, at least therapeutically, and that's rapid effects, large-scale effects, and enduring effects across what appear to be a variety of diagnostic conditions. So the application is transdiagnostic, really underscores the importance of us not only investigating the therapeutic potential, but understanding these underlying mechanisms.
We're talking with Dr. Roland Griffiths, who directs the Center for Psychedelic and Consciousness Research at Johns Hopkins Medicine. Also with us, Charles Grobe, Dr. Grobe, Professor of Psychiatry and Pediatrics at UCLA's Geffen School of Medicine, and he's Director of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry at Harbor UCLA Medical Center. Dr. Grobe, it's good to have you with us again. Your thoughts about Johns Hopkins taking this on?
Oh, I think this is represents a tremendous advance forward for this field. Hopkins is very well situated to explore these various areas that Dr. Griffiths has mentioned. I think they holds great potential and should be a real stimulus for more research in this area, not only at Hopkins, but around the country and around the world. It's a very, very exciting area. And, these are very ancient medicines, and yet in many respects, it's now, once again, the cutting edge of new research.
Before we get into the physically therapeutic potential assets of hallucinogens, I wonder about, as I was talking with Dr. Griffiths, about sort of the perception of breakthrough, of life-changing experiences people say they've had when using some of these compounds. And I wonder about how you differentiate between the sorts of excitement, the visceral feeling just of exhilaration versus truly profound insights. How do you tease apart someone's perception of insight versus real insight?
Well, I think the test will really be how one applies these insights to one's life, and over time, with the aid of a therapist, examining the substance of the insight and see, how germane it is and how relevant it is to one's life. I think that the true measure, though, in the long run, is positive change. If individuals can utilize personal insights or whatever experience they might have during this experience to improve the quality of their lives and to improve the level of their function, I think the evidence then is in the outcome.
And what are some of the challenges in researching psilocybin or LSD on the issue of safety? Because we know that individuals can have widely varying response to the substances. How does research sort of get to that issue to help deal with the safety matters?
Right. Well, that's a very important area to address, and the Johns Hopkins group, as well as other research groups around the country, have really emphasized the need to optimize safety parameters. Going back to the Hippocratic Oath, above all, do no harm. And that's first and foremost the number one thing that must be addressed. But, by having, doing very thorough reviews of the individual's prior history, screen out those who might not be a good risk for this treatment. And also working, having staff available who have, good understanding of this treatment model, are skilled in holding the space as it were, and who really can facilitate an optimal outcome. Also, therapists who will have strong ethical parameters is very important, but establishing good safety parameters and then maintaining them throughout the course of the treatment is essential.
We're talking with Professor of Psychiatry and Pediatrics at UCLA's Geffen School of Medicine, Dr. Charles Grobe, also with us from Johns Hopkins Medicine, Director of the Center for Psychedelic and Consciousness Research, Dr. Roland Griffiths. They have raised $17 million from private donors donors to launch this research center into LSD, psilocybin, looking at it for a range of mental health issues, for addiction help, anorexia, depression, Alzheimer's, a host of potential medical benefits. If you have questions for our guests, we're at 866-893-KPCC, 866-893-5722, or the AirTalk page, kpcc.org. Dr. Griffiths, I would assume that when you're doing testing, objective studies on a substance like this, one of the challenges is weeding out the sort of exhilarating effect of the substances, much as you'd have to do if you were, studying alcohol as a stress reliever, for example. And how do you get past the placebo effect here when people can have such a positive response, just a good feeling from taking one of these substances?
Well, that's a great question. There are different controls that we have introduced in studying psilocybin now over the last almost 20 years. You can use an active comparator drug. You can also use blinded conditions in which you give very low doses of psilocybin, yet tell people that they're going to get psilocybin. You can look at dose effects. And all of those studies combined make it really quite clear that there's something very unique and powerful about the pharmacology of these substances above and beyond any ability to simply change acute mood effects. I've, over the years, worked with many, many different psychoactive substances, mostly substances of abuse, and I'm very familiar with measuring, as you say, exhilaration or subjective effects. The interesting feature about the psychedelics are that, yes, it produces acute effects, but the value that people attribute to that experience is sustained. So months after the experience, people will continue to report that experience was among the most personally meaningful of their lives, and they will report changed attitudes, moods, and behavior in positive direction that they attribute to that experience. And so that's really quite different than if you give an opiate or cocaine or a sedative hypnotic. People may remember the experience, but it doesn't inform them enduringly going forward. So there's something very powerful about this.
We're just about out of time, but I wonder, too, about, and I know we're a long, long way from this, but could you envision, if you're able to quantify the benefits of say, LSD or psilocybin for different types of treatment, where it could be prescribed, tested, regulated, and that could be a widespread protocol?
Yeah, absolutely. So there are two entities now that are moving toward regulatory trials that, if they are positive, would ultimately result in the medical approval of psilocybin. And the two lead indications is for major depressive disorder or treatment-resistant depression. Those trials are in the beginning stages. I would guess that approval might be 5 years away if everything goes well. But I also think that could be just the beginning. We believe that there's just the ability of these compounds to profoundly influence other diagnostic categories, other behavioral problems. But we'll have to let the data speak for themselves.
Gentlemen, I want to thank you very much. That's Dr. Roland Griffiths, Johns Hopkins, where he directs the new Center for Psychedelic and Consciousness Research, and Dr. Charles Grobe, UCLA Geffen School of Medicine, professor of psychiatry and pediatrics. He also directs child and adolescent psychiatry at Harbor UCLA Medical Center. You can share your thoughts about this school of study at the AirTalk page, kpecc.org. By the way, coming up at noon on Fresh Air with Terry Gross, Stephen Kinzer, the journalist, his new book, poisoner-in-chief details how unwitting subjects in prisons and detention centers were subjected to psychological torture by the CIA's secret experiments with LSD in the 50s and 60s. That's Fresh Air with Terry coming up at noon. We'll be back with you right after a live update from Julie Slater.